Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And a very good evening. I'm John Kenny in for Hugh Cowell tonight. Welcome to Game On here on 2FM. We have reactions to Ireland's win over Romania. BBC golf correspondent Ian Carter on Jordan Spieth's win of the Tour Championship in Atlanta. Breege Corkery on yet another ladies' football title for Cork. And footy with Eamon Dunphy and Tony O'Donoghue. And of course, Alan Cawley, who's with me in studio. Alan Cawley, how are you doing?
Evening, John. Buddy? How are you?
I'm good, yeah. Good day. Had a very good day.
Let them all know, John.
No,
let them all know.
No, we'll talk about it later. No, okay. It was a very good day, a very good weekend. And what a weekend for sport.
I had a very good weekend as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Well, just as you said, it was a great weekend for sport. So I was tuned into a lot of the football and the big rugby match Saturday night, which obviously was England-Wales. And I was out and about yesterday and I didn't watch the Ireland match. Forgive me. No. I'm waiting for the big ones.
Yeah, what did you do yesterday?
Well, I went down to Limerick. It was a day out with the family, John.
Right.
And then we're down in Kildare Village and just floating around and good.
Well, that's the weekend that was.
Yes, of course, it's a good feeling. You showed the world, and especially Great Britain, that we shall compete because of the title. You have to be at that situation in the month of May and not in the month of September. So I'm pleased, but we have to continue, and we have to continue against Arsenal away, and that is not so simple.
Oh, he's got the direction, and he's got the distance, and Wales are ahead! His name is Dan Biggar. Game over. Battered, bruised, but they never know when they're beaten. And Wales within touching distance of the quarterfinals. England hanging on by a thread now.
Obviously, he's disappointed, as I was immediately after the game. 22-12 up after 50 minutes, and you know, we're in a position to win the game. And obviously, we gave a couple of penalties away, which allowed Wales to build belief and momentum. You know, we stay united, and obviously, we've got a massive game now to build into Australia, because it's now a knockout game.
I think we're lucky in that once you've tasted success, you want a bit more, and I think that's the case with Cork. There's a great panel of players, there are great management, and we're just lucky it all came together in a victory today.
Redden moves it out, and there's a chance here now, swept outside towards Earls, inside the 22. Earls explodes, goes to the corner, goes for the try, touches it down. The Byros magician has scored a try for Ireland.
Around to the feet of Sean O'Brien, he's had to go the opposite direction. Here comes Paddy Jackson, sweeps it across far side. Tommy Moe for the corner! Tommy Moe for the try! Ireland for the bonus point!
Massive week ahead, I think. You know, Italy will be a whole different proposition. Sergio Parise is due to arrive tomorrow, and with Sergio, he's a bit of a talisman for them, and they haven't probably hit their straps as yet, but I suppose they'll be looking at next week and saying, why not next week, because it's such a pivotal game for both of us.
It's a really good album from New Order, brand new album from New Order as well. That's music that I suggested, and production by Andrew O'Connor, so there you go. It's a good album. Good album. And a good week. A good weekend as well. Great weekend for sport.
Great weekend. Yeah.
What about United, top of the league? Who'd have thought?
I think my laugh explains it all, John. Who would have thought? After all the criticism and the average performances, to think they're on top. And the way it's panned out with City, who would have predicted they would have lost so heavily against Spurs? And I watched Chelsea Saturday evening, and they have big problems. Chelsea, they're struggling.
God, they were awful against Newcastle.
Awful, yeah. Newcastle will be kicking themselves because they'll never have a better chance to win.
Absolutely, should have won it. Right, it was a case of job done for Ireland. They made light work of Romania, seeing off their Pool D opponents in the World Cup 44-10 in front of a Rugby World Cup record crowd of 89,267 at Wembley. That's a great tweet, actually, from Brian O'Driscoll. Twickenham will be rocking with, Wembley will be rocking with the Mount of Podricks, who'll be there. It's very good.
Was it not 90, no?
89,267 is what the official tells.
Some crowd.
It was amazing. Joe Smith's team racked up 6 tries. Earls got 2, Bow got 2. Rob Kearney was later forced off injured. Chris Henry all crossing the whitewash. Ian Madigan slotted all of Ireland's kicked points with an assured display from the out half. So plenty of selection headaches ahead of Joe Smith. The next game against Italy next weekend, and Michael Corcoran has been speaking to Irish manager Mick Carney today about the upcoming match.
I think that there's a view that Sergio Parisse will be back for Italy, and he adds a huge amount to the Italian team. He is their talisman, I suppose. And, you know, it is a bit of a do-or-die game for Italy in that if they lose to us, they're out of the tournament quite early. So it is going to be, I think, a major challenge for us. I suppose it's akin to a last 16 game in that we know that if we beat Italy, we're definitely into the quarterfinal. And then it's a question really of whether we finished top or second in the group when we play France the following Sunday.
In terms of selection this week, I mean, there certainly would appear to be on the face of it if you go through the two matches that have been played, principally even yesterday, that there are a couple of A or B selections for to be made.
Yeah, certainly. I think, which is, I suppose it's a headache for the coach, but it's actually a great headache as well to have. You know, you look at, say, Devon Toner coming in yesterday after Ian Henderson starting and doing really well against Canada. I thought Devon really put his hand up and had an exceptional game. I thought if you look then at the back three, I thought Simon Zeebo was outstanding at full back. He was involved in three of the tries. I think he gave the scoring path for three tries and then was very unlucky to put a foot in the touch for a try for himself. You've also got Tommy Bow, who I thought was fantastic as well. Keith Earls, obviously man of the match, and deservedly so. So that back three area of the team is hugely competitive. I also think that, you know, you look at, say, the front row, Tyke Furlan come on and did well. You have Nathan White who stepped up to the plate yesterday as well. So I think right throughout the group, there are an awful lot of individuals who are playing really, really well. And I think that's a real positive for the confidence of the group going forward into the next two, I suppose, really important matches.
Mick Carney there with Michael Corcoran. One other piece of news we're hearing that Simon Zeebo has gone home for his grandfather's funeral, but he will be back with the squad ahead of the Italian game. And I'm joined by two stalwarts of Irish rugby, Donal Lenehan and Shane Horgan. Good evening to you, gentlemen. Donal, job done, as we mentioned. What did you make to it all?
Yeah, it was, as you say, job done. It was a sort of a surreal atmosphere, really, John, when you know, the announcement was made about the world record attendance. You had Mexican waves to contend with. I mean, there must have been 80,000 Irish supporters there. It really was incredible in and around Wembley, the atmosphere building up from early in the afternoon. And, you know, in those circumstances, difficult for players to hold their concentration throughout the 80 minutes, but they were clinical at what they did in most aspects. Some aspects I think Joe Smith won't be overly happy about. Certainly issues in defence I think that Ireland will have to resolve before the bigger tests, and there are bigger tests coming. But look, they've ticked all the boxes in the opening two games. They've scored 13 tries. I think the biggest plus is the fact that 30 of the 31-man squad have seen game time, and as a result of that, everybody now feels part of the of the effort to advance to the quarter-final stages. And the injury profile is, you know, in comparison to other teams, is quite healthy. Now, obviously, there's a slight concern about Rob Kearney. He definitely, his injury happened right underneath us in the game yesterday. He didn't look happy walking around the perimeter of the pitch. So there is a slight concern about him. But thankfully, Keith Earls, who also had to go off, is okay. And if Robbie Henshaw is fit and available, then all 31 players will be involved. So the positives far outweigh everything else. But I think there has to be a realization within the group that, look, you know, the opening two games, the quality of opposition that you've met will bear no resemblance to what you're going to meet, maybe even not next week, but certainly with France and thereafter New Zealand or Argentina. So, you know, job done, but a lot more to do.
Sure. Shane, obviously the first thing, win the game, get your bonus point, move on. But who impressed you yesterday? Who's actually got a chance, you think, from the team that he changed from the first match to the Romanian game that might have a chance of playing against Italy next weekend?
Well, if you look at it, there's only a few places that potentially could change, or realistic changes that could be made. Certainly the back three is a place to look at. All of a sudden, Rob Kearney is a doubt. He's strained his glute, as was alluded to there. And, you know, I'm not certain if that's something that's going to clear up in a week. If it doesn't, it's not necessarily a huge problem, certainly not against the Italian. Zeebo was very impressive at the weekend. He was getting on the ball a lot. His passing was excellent, distribution very good, a variety of passes good. He was attacking players at every opportunity, and he looked really quick and sharp. Less concerns over his, you know, his catching game as well, which has improved steadily over the last 6 months, and also his positioning in the field. So, you know, very positive there. If there is a problem with Rob, I think Zeebo will slot in fairly seamlessly at 15. Then we look at the wingers, and I still think Dave Carney is nailed down to start on one of the wings. I think Tommy Bowe did have a good game yesterday, but it may just have come a little bit too late. He hasn't showed enough form thus far to maybe to take over from Dave Carney. And I think then the other wing is opened up. If Zeebo isn't an option at wing and he is at fullback, then we're looking, is it going to be Luke Fitzgerald, who's impressed and is a Joe Smith favourite, and Keith Earl, who's just been exceptional over the last couple of games and was rightly man of the match and seems to have an incredible knack for scoring tries. Now Ireland's leading try scorer in the World Cup ever, which is kind of crazy. He's bringing great form in again, looks very quick. But he may even start there again if Henshaw isn't ready at 13. So from that stage, there's a couple of changes that could happen in the back. I think we haven't seen the last of Devon Toner as well. There's been a huge push for Henderson to start in the second row along with Paul O'Connell, but I think we saw Devon Toner really fighting for his position. He was good at set piece, carried the ball well. I think he's well able to distribute as well. So I think that's going to be a very tight call. And I think the good thing about all these calls that are made, there's not a huge amount. We touched on maybe three there, that different ones that, or different combinations that Joe could pick. The good thing about them is, whichever combinations Joe ultimately does go with, it's not going to weaken the team. Everybody's almost had a run out Henshaw's side. Everyone will be confident, and you would expect that whatever team Joe puts out against Italy, there'll be more than enough of them.
Yeah, Shane's been singing Donal Zeebo's praises there, but do you think he's kind of Smith's man? I know he could have scored a sensational try yesterday, except for that foot and touch. Do you think he's the kind of player that Smith would like?
Well, look, it's well known that there were issues and aspects of Simon Zeebo's game that Joe Schmidt wasn't overly happy with 12 or 18 months ago. He was looking for greater workload in the contact area in particular. But I think Zeebo has worked extremely hard, and he's improved his game immeasurably. I mean, that's what Joe does. He puts players under pressure. But the key with Joe Schmidt is he explains to people what he expects of them, and if they improve in the areas that require improvement, then you'll be rewarded. You know, speaking to Joe Schmidt after the game, he was certainly very happy with Simon Zeebo's contribution. And I think if he doesn't make, I think he'll definitely slot in for Rob Carney if there's any doubt whatsoever about Rob being less than 100% fit, because, you know, with the games that are coming up thereafter. But in worst case scenario, I think Simon Zeebo has to be on the bench, because, you know, he can do things that other players just aren't capable of. And in terms of making an impact, I think that's going to be hugely important. Likewise, the various selection decisions that Shane is alluding to there, the likes of Devon Toner, Keith Earls or Luke Fitzgerald, whoever gets left out is going to be in the match day 23. And, you know, if you're going to win the World Cup or if you're going to progress in this tournament, then you have to have players with the capacity to make that impact on 55, 60 minutes, or indeed to cover players who've got injured earlier on in the game. And, you know, that's the beauty of where Ireland are at the moment. You know, even fellas like Chris Henry, it was a lot of competition in the back row, but he came in and I thought he was outstanding. So overall, Joe Schmidt has the type of selection headaches I'm sure that Warren Gatland would love. I mean, you know, you're looking at one extreme to the other. One coach is looking, you know, who have I got left fit, while another has a sort of an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, sure. What about the Italian game, Shane? Italy didn't really play well at all against Canada, just kind of sneaked over the line there. What we expected, obviously a tough physical game, but that shouldn't be a problem, do you think?
I don't think, you know, it's hard. You don't want to diminish any World Cup game, because there's a certain pressure that comes with it that you'll only find in the World Cup. But at the same time, if you look at it in any sort of dispassionate way, Italy haven't played well for a long time, and they haven't brought any form into the World Cup, and they haven't shown any form in the World Cup. I think that Ireland are at the moment playing a couple of levels above Italy. I know they've been missing Parise, their as has been mentioned, the party line is that he's the talisman, as both Mick Kearney and Joe Smith, we heard from them in the interviews there. But he is but one man, and our back row is very, very physical. It's very strong, as Donald said there. Henry had a great performance yesterday, and you know he's ready to slot right in. I think what's really encouraging for Ireland is we don't have to get hung up actually on who our first 15 is, and almost right across the squad there is a huge amount of players that can slot in and slot out, and that is increasingly going to become important. We're so lucky that we've had the opportunity to play against teams that haven't, there hasn't been the same sort of impactful physical nature of the games, and we're now a little bit battle-hardened after two games. There will be a physical contribution from the Italians, and it will be difficult for Ireland. It will be certainly a step up from Ireland, but I think we're looking very sharp on our road in plays. We seem to be trying a lot of things from set plays as well to break teams down directly from that. I think those two things bode really well for Ireland and could cause Italy huge problems.
And do you think, Shane, that it's better that we play the weaker teams in the group first?
Well, I think, listen, you could be in a situation where you're going to play against Italy and in a couple of weeks against France, where you're, you know, you're like Wales. If you've got one of your big matches early, then you could be down a number of players. And we even look at England. They're in a situation now where they've played one of their big games early. They've no, only the points on the board against Fiji, and they have to go against Australia in a make or break game, having been being down a number of the players, and that's a concern. And you look at from a Wales perspective, they're so badly down in numbers after that incredibly physical second pool game to England, that they're playing against Fiji, and now this Fiji game for them becomes quite tricky. Now, I've no doubt if the Fiji was their first or second opponent in the group stage, I think Wales would win it. But because they're down such numbers, because of the toll that the England game has taken out from them, I think that becomes a much more difficult game to win.
Sure. Donald, you enjoyed the World Cup overall? I mean, there was a great excitement in Ireland, Irish rugby supporters watching the Welsh-England match. It was a terrific game.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I was lucky enough to be there. I mean, I've been at four matches now over the course of the last 2 weekends, New Zealand and Argentina. It was a really cracking game, and you know, I was there specifically because, you know, we'd expect to be playing one of those in the quarterfinals. Two outstanding sides. The atmosphere at Wales and England on Saturday night was just electric. I mean, before the teams came out, they turned off all the lights in the stadium, and then they put these little spotlights on. And, you know, the singing of the national anthems from both sets of supporters was really amazing. But at halftime, John, I mean, I spoke to several ex-England players that I would know during the halftime break, and none of us could see Wales winning the game. I mean, England were so dominant in the set piece. Wales, with the injuries they had, they looked a very limited side. Their scrum was all over the place, and you just couldn't see where they were going to win the match. But then, you know, in the crucial point in the game, England's lack of experience showed, came through. They almost froze under the pressure that was there. And, you know, I'm with Shane in terms of, I think that Fiji game is a potential banana skin for Wales for all kinds of reasons, not least the emotional energy that was put into beating England. To try and get up again within 4 or 5 days is huge. But for that reason alone, I just can't fathom how England didn't opt to take the penalty to draw the game. Because
it wouldn't have been the worst result in the world, no.
No, it wouldn't have been. No. Plus, they also have Uruguay in their last game, so they'd know exactly what they had to do going into that last pool match. So, you know, it really was a crazy decision. One that I think might even look worse after Wales play Fiji on Thursday.
Indeed. Listen, thanks for joining us, lads. That's Shane Horgan and Donal Lenehan joining us, and the game Ireland against Italy live and exclusive on RT Radio over the weekend. This might one you might answer. Great crowd for the Irish game in London yesterday, but epitomised the real sunshine supporters in Irish sports in all codes. They would not cross the road to watch an AIL local game. All of us devoted League of Ireland fans, experience the same with Barstoolers following, quote-unquote, not supporting Premiership teams. Billy in Cork.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I know how Billy feels, to be honest with you, John, but...
Anybody's entitled to buy a ticket, though, right?
Of course, yeah, but, like, you see this in all the major events. Like, we've seen it when Ireland qualified for European Championships, the amount of people that went to Poland, yet sure. the last qualifying
Irish people game, love occasions,
well, yet the, yeah, of course, and that's just our nature. But you see then a couple of weeks ago the match in the Aviv against Georgia, and there was only 25,000 at it. So it's a problem in all sports, I think. But for Billy's point, yeah, it's just, and to be fair to the Rugby World Cup, it looks fantastic, the stadiums and the whole lot. It's a real spectacle and it looks great, but I think that's just the problem, and you just have to kind of deal with it. There's, I don't know the solution to that, because we all love to just jump on a big kind of bandwagon at an event.
Yeah. Well, my little bugbear about this, and I think it's terrific what the Irish rugby team are doing, and obviously in terms of soccer, hopefully we'll get to the European Championships. The Irish cricket team are constantly now beating teams at the world level, the top level. And what are they doing in World Cup? Restricting it or constricting it, which is terrible.
It is terrible, yeah. Well, the only issue I would have with this, John, is that the real supporters don't get caught out when obviously the Sunshine fellas are getting on the bandwagon and trying to go. And the ones who were there, we've seen it with the All-Ireland final. I know people who go to games, Dublin supporters go all around the country to watch them and couldn't get a ticket. So I think it's when it's the real supporters lose out, that's when you have the problems. And I don't think that's fair.
Sure. Okay, it was 10 wins out of 11 for the Cork ladies football team. They beat Dublin yesterday by 12 points to 10 in the All-Ireland football final, ladies football final. We'll be talking to Breege Corkery, who's won our 16th All-Ireland. Welcome back to Game On. The victorious All-Ireland winning Cork ladies footballers are en route home this evening. They're expected on Leaside around 8 o'clock with a reception planned for the South Mall from around 8.30. If you're in the area, pop along. Eamon Ryan has guided the team to win 10 of the last 11 All-Ireland titles. Remarkably, yesterday's 12 points to 10 win over Dublin completed another 5 in a row for the county. And for dual stars, Breege Corkery, named player of the match, and Rena Buckley, it's their 16th All-Ireland title. They've got 10 football wins and have captured 6 senior camogie medals. Remarkable stuff. Well, I spoke to Breege on the Cork bus, was heading home for those celebrations in the Rebel County a little earlier before we came on air.
It's just been an amazing year. You know, things didn't go our way in the middle of the year, and, you know, girls just really picked it up from the final after getting a hammering from Kerry. I suppose every All-Ireland is different. Everyone has a different meaning. But I suppose this year was just unbelievable, because it's fantastic.
You'll give me all the platitudes about this being a team game, but when you found out that you were named as player of the match, you must have been doubly proud.
I suppose it's nice, you know, but, you know, as I said, you know, before, you can play as well unless the girls around you play well as well. So it's, you know, that's kind of, it's all about, you know, everyone working hard together. And it just, I suppose it just makes everyone look better when we all play well, do you know that kind of way?
Sure, yeah, I understand that. You know, and yourself and Rena Buckley obviously have a host of All-Ireland titles between you at both camogie and football level. What drives you on?
We just both love playing football and camogie. It's a part of our life. If people ask us, you know, what do we do outside of football and camogie, it's kind of hard to answer. But, you know, like, we go to training to meet our friends. We're there with a lot of them since we were 12. And, you know, other for a cup of coffee or they go for a pint, whereas we go to training.
Tell us about the game itself. You were 9-5 ahead at one stage. Do you think you could drive it on there? But Dublin came back at that stage, didn't they?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, Valerie converted some great threes. You know, and it was really hard to, you know, we knew until the final whistle that there was nothing won until that whistle went. And I suppose, you know, they were always going to be bearing down on goals and stuff like that, and we just tried to stop them as much as we could. But, you know, it was heart stopping stuff until the very end, and it was just great to come out with a win at the end.
Sure. I know you mentioned they got beaten by Kerry earlier on this year, but do you think Dublin are the best side that you met this campaign?
They were definitely the toughest of it. You know, we had a hard grass game against Galway as well, but there was just two different styles. Dublin funnel back, they played very, you know, they played a sweeper in the back line, and it was, you know, it was really hard to break them down. But I suppose, you know, when we took them on, they, you know, maybe they followed us, and it was just Valerie converted the threes very well. And, you know, at half time as well, you know, we'd lost one of our greatest players in Cork, Darlene Sin, to an injury, and she came in at half time and she told us, you know, it was up to us to win it. And I think that drove us on for the second half.
What was it like then, being presented with the trophy or getting the presentation of the trophy? It must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, I suppose when Kira lifted that trophy, your son. It just meant the world to us. It meant the world to Eamon Ryan and Frankie Hoonan and the rest of the management team, Heather and Shane and Bridget. It was just, I suppose when you go through a downtime during the year, you find you'd be questioning whether you'd ever be able to bring it back around again. And it just shows the character of the girls that,
sure,
you know, they brought it around again and they tried as hard as they could and we worked really hard.
Well, it's a testimony that you've won 10 and 11 now. What about the crowd? 31,083, a remarkable crowd, biggest crowd for a women's or ladies event in the world this year. That must have been also a plus for you, not just as the Cork team, but also as for ladies football, junior, intermediate and senior.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a fierce crowd. You know, they say, I suppose because we've been there with the last 10 years, they'd be wondering is it bad for the game, but it clearly shows that, you know, it's not. The crowd that was there, there was as many Cork people there as there was Dublin. It was just, it was great for ladies football, it was great for women's sport that everyone turned up. And it was really nice to have the crowd there. I remember in the last 10 minutes when Dublin were attacking, you know, the shouting and the roaring that Dublin fans were doing was just, it was just mad, it was frightening really.
Must be nice to play in front of a big crowd. And obviously Cork drive on now. Tell us about Eamon Ryan, will he stay on his position as manager, do you think?
Well, he hasn't told us anything. We're uncertain. I suppose we don't even know ourselves who's staying on as players and stuff. So I suppose we'll just enjoy the weekend. After that, then we'll just see who's staying, who's going. And for Eamon, we don't know. We hope he doesn't go, but he owes nothing to us. He's just been outstanding.
And what about yourself? Will you continue to play in both codes?
I more than likely will, I suppose, to be honest. You know, it's hard to walk away from it. As I said, I've had friendships here since I was 12 years old, and it's hard to walk away from it. But look, I don't know. It's kind of very hard to tell. But I would imagine I'd play with you.
Well, enjoy the night, Breach, and thanks for joining us on the bus and the celebrations down to Cork. We hope you have a great night. Thanks for joining us, Beach Corkery.
No bother at all. Thanks, John. Sir.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
Oh yes, Game on 2FM. I'm John Kenny in for Hugh Cahill. Tonight, the long-awaited independent review of the League of Ireland has been presented to the board of the FAI and today to the Airtricity League clubs. It'll be made public, hopefully very shortly. And Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, is on the line. Tony, what do you know?
Well, I'm outside Abbottstown, John, where the delegates from the 20 league clubs are inside being presented, getting their first view of the Conroy report. It is the most comprehensive review of the League of Ireland probably since the Genesis report. You and I might remember that one in 2006. And following on from the Genesis report came the merger of the League of Ireland with the Football Association of Ireland, with the FAI running the league. Now, has that been a success? Well, that merger, officially, that arrangement comes to an end in 2016. So I think it probably is quite timely that we have this review at this stage to see basically where do we go from here. There are plenty of fundamental questions, you know. Should the first division be scrapped is something that we hear quite often. It's often been described as the graveyard for football and for clubs who get relegated. Can the league attract a worldwide television audience? That was something that Niall Quinn seemed fairly strong on, that he felt there was an opportunity to promote the Airtricity League brand around the world. How can the standard be improved? These are the fundamental questions that Declan Conroy set about trying to answer. Now, people might have heard of Declan Conroy. He was the bid director and helped Ireland succeed in gaining games in the 2020 European Championship. They'll be coming to Dublin. He was also involved in bringing the Europa League final to the Aviva Stadium in 2011 and has been involved in consultation with lots of leagues through work with FIFA and UEFA. What I believe he's saying to the clubs tonight is some radical proposals. Mm-hmm. And instead of scrapping the first division, we may find that he'd be anxious to increase the first division to 10 clubs and reduce the Premier League. Now, how that will go and if we'll run with the clubs. No one wants to be relegated, of course, and no one wants to see their potential profits go down. But it would be a question of rebranding the entire league. And that's something that, as I say, the delegates will have to consider carefully. I don't think any decisions are going to be made tonight. I think they'll just decide to read the report. It's 75 pages long, 190 people interviewed. It really, they hope, will be a catalyst for discussion. There's certainly some things have come clearly through. There needs to be more prize money. A lot of the clubs very disappointed that if you can win the league, you only get 100,000. There has to be more.
You get more money for qualifying for European competition, Tony, don't you?
Well, exactly. But I mean, you know, sometimes in other leagues as well, success is rewarded. But maybe the reward should be shared throughout the league, because others will say that you're only as strong as your weakest link. There was a cost and a revenue analysis. It does cost more to run the league than the revenue it generates at the moment, but they could look at other different sponsorship ideas and stuff. You know, club licensing came in 10 years ago. There are 55 development officers in the FAI at the moment, but there's no marketing person for the league itself, and there's plenty of opportunities lost there. So all the clubs were consulted. It is a comprehensive review of the league, as I understand it. We'll have to see and speak to the delegates when they come out and see whether any of it will wash with them. But I do think it's important. You can't just, you know, what's the definition of madness? Doing the same thing time and time again and hoping for a different result.
So, you're going to have an interview with John Delaney on Soccer Republic tonight, Tony. Is that what you're looking for?
We'll have to wait and see on that one. I mean, we're here to hopefully speak to the delegates in particular who represent the clubs, and hopefully Declan Conroy, as I say, who compiled this report will speak to us as well. So we'll see. But look, as far as he was concerned, you know, the clubs had several options, but one of them would be just, do you want to leave everything as they are? Do you want to revert to the clubs running the league as it was before 2007? Do you want to just start the whole thing again? Some people were talking about franchise situations that you'd get now with the Australian A-League. Or I believe there will be a new structure proposed in this report. And then, as I say, the delegates will have to consider that one. I don't think we're going to get any dramatic changes happening tonight. Obviously, there'll be a consideration of the various proposals, and we'll see where the clubs go after that.
All right, off about you, Tony. That's Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent. Actually, check out Soccer Republic tonight, 11 o'clock on RTE2 television. And Eamon Dunphy joins me to talk more about soccer in the UK, perhaps. But a quick word, I know obviously you were involved in the League of Ireland down the years, Eamon. We didn't get much really from what Tony was saying about the report, because obviously being presented to the clubs now, but do you think there needs a radical shake-up?
Well, 190 people were interviewed. I wasn't one of them. I spent 3 years of my life trying to persuade the Football Association and the League of Ireland to accept $500 million investment, which in today's money would be about $1.5 billion. But they slammed the door on our faces.
Is this Wimbledon you're talking about, is it?
That's Wimbledon.
Yeah.
It was a £500 million investment in the League of Ireland and Irish soccer. Door shut. That would be in today's, that was the mid-90s, would be $1.5 billion in today's terms. They said it would destroy the league. And so if they don't want $1.5 billion, if I'm not one of the 190 most, you know, interested observers who might be, I don't think they interviewed Liam Brady or John Giles, who were two friends of mine, who might know. But of course, Niall Quinn has a great idea, and maybe they should try that. They should try and market it along with La Liga and, you know, the Premier League around the world and see how they go that way.
What do you think, Al?
First of all, John, I'm just delighted that actually something seems to be happening, and hopefully whatever recommendations come out of this, that they're actually implemented and hopefully try something, because as Tony said and even Eamon said there, at the moment it's basically going nowhere. It's just going from year to year, and it's almost, it seems to me, and I follow it, as you know, week in, week out, it seems to me that the powers that be, when they get to the end of the season come November, it's like, brilliant, we got through another season, no clubs went to the wall, we can break now for 3 or 4 months and let's just start all over again next year with the same formula, the same kind of repetitiveness. And finally there seems to be something happening with this report, so hopefully, as I say,
we don't know the whole details of it yet,
but we'll
Tony,
see, obviously,
Tony's kind of sketched over it.
Yeah, the recommendations are going to come out of it, and hopefully there's some good ones and some good ideas, because I'm in full agreement that something radical needs to happen, John, because as I say, it's going nowhere at the moment, the league.
Could I just make another observation?
Sure,
Eamon,
yeah.
John, I watched League of Ireland when it's on Network 2, and I watched the game against Bate in the European Champions League qualifier, and I saw the pitch. The match should not have been played, and the home team should be disqualified from the competition. That is Dundalk. I believe they're the champions. It was a disgrace, an absolute disgrace. It was grey, bumpy, and, you know, Bate who've qualified for knockout stages, actually, have every reason to complain. So have the Dundalk players.
Yeah, and well, Dundalk will say in their own defence that that is a pitch that they use all year round, not just for Dundalk as well, and they need the money.
You try and market that, like Niall Quinn, around the world. You see, that's the image of a league where nobody gives a damn.
Yeah, that I agree with the pitches
and
that.
The elephant in the room. They've interviewed 190 people, and they haven't interviewed some of the smartest people in Irish football. Were you asked, Alan?
No.
No. I don't know anyone. Are you telling me they didn't interview John Giles and Liam Brady?
It looks like
that. I don't know. You're saying that you weren't interviewed. I can't speak to the other two.
But that's just one example, John.
I'm 70 now, and I've spent 65 years either watching League of Ireland football or playing it for a couple of seasons, wanting it to do well, seeing its golden age, and I'm not someone. Well, maybe ask him. I spent 17 years in England playing, you know, from clubs from Manchester United, Millwall, around the game. I've written 5 best-selling books, you know, and they couldn't interview me.
I don't even know who was interviewed, John.
Well, no, I don't know.
This is spin. This is bullshit.
Okay, we're not giving it a spin. We're just saying to you at the moment
spin is that there's a new report that might produce something.
Yeah.
And there isn't. A report won't produce anything.
Well, we haven't heard what's actually in the report yet. That's the problem from our point of view. Tony was only able to gloss over because it's been defended at the clubs.
Who are they talking to, John?
At the moment, they're talking to the clubs.
Who are they talking to? Now, if you want to talk about the League of Ireland, then, and the game in this country, then you should talk to people who've made a commitment to the game in this country throughout their lives. Who are they talking to?
Well, by all accounts, I don't know that. I think they spoke to RT about the TV side of things. They spoke to people. I think the clubs themselves, a lot of fans. Until we see the findings, we won't actually know him.
No.
But I would have the same skepticism.
That's like asking someone who wants to book a room in a hotel. How do we build a hotel?
But I would have the exact same scepticism as you. But until we see the findings and the recommendations, it's hard to kind of. I suppose you have to give them a chance.
Well,
on that
we
as
know
well.
Already that John Delaney has described the report as the most comprehensive review of the league to date. That's in his words,
and that's fine, John. Right, and I've no problem with that. The only thing that, and even as Eamon said, anybody can write a report. But is the appetite there to actually implement some of these recommendations?
Yeah, because the jury is certainly out on the Genesis report.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the question.
What would they say to a $1.5 billion offer today? Suppose the Qataris came, as they did to France, and they bought PSG. If they came to, which is exactly, you know, if they came to the League of Ireland and offered $1.5 billion, what would happen?
I think they'd snap your hands off.
Well, what's changed then from the mid-90s when a consortium of people, including Paul McGuinness, the manager of U2, one of the big people in the world, and other people, tried to inject this kind of money into Irish soccer?
Well, as I say, we just have to wait for the report to come out.
Okay.
That's all we could do. If we had the report in front of me, we could go through it line by line, Eamon, but we just don't have it. We're just
going
to conjunction.
I'm not going to go with you.
Oh, I didn't say for one second that you are.
I'm just telling you what anybody with common sense would say, that a report that didn't interview people who are smart, experienced, and isn't me, interviewed John Giles, interviewed Liam Brady. I'd say there's not a hope. Oh, pops Niall Quinn. Great. Continue. Sorry, John. he's got a great idea. We'll sell it to the Spanish with that lousy pitch in Dundalk. And they say, what's that?
Oh, it's the pitch in Dundalk thing is going to start off all over again.
No, the pitch is a disgrace.
True.
He's right.
Yeah. I was shocked when
it is. It's terrible. But
the Champions League qualifier match, I felt sorry for the home players.
Well, they actually, I think if Stephen Kenny had a choice, he'd rip it up. But I think the only defence on that Champions League game was that it passed all the relevant criteria.
Yeah, UEFA came and looked at it.
But in terms of the pitch, Eamon, I'm watching it week in, week out. I've played on it. It's horrendous.
I know, but that's not anybody's fault other than the people who are running Irish soccer.
Mm. But this is what we've been saying for years.
UEFA looked at it. Who's in charge of UEFA? Michel Platini. Hello, is he the same Michel Platini That's now under investigation, yes.
OK, listen, we're going to run out of time here. Quick question about Jack Grealish. He's declared for England today, Eamon. What do you make to that?
I'm very disappointed, but it's probably what was always going to happen. He's a top, top player. He really is going to be a big, big player, I think, in the game. When he gets a bit stronger, but he really was outstanding. I've seen him twice in the last 7 days. I remember him from the semi-final of the Cup when he, you know, turned the game Villa's way when they beat Liverpool last year. A couple of comments, one made about his father by Roy Keane about a year ago, would not have helped. And another comment by Martin O'Neill after the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, that the next Irish game would have been a bit too much for him. Mightn't have helped either. We could have capped him against Gibraltar, and that might have made his mind up for him, but we didn't.
That's where the trick was missed, John, the Gibraltar. Because everybody knew the potential. And the problem
But would he have showed up?
If he was picked at that stage, I think he would.
He's playing for the under-23s or under-21s, John.
I think he would have at that stage. Because
I know he's capped the under-21s. I totally understand that. But I'm just saying that if he was selected, we don't know whether he
would have. Well, it was about 18 months ago, that game. So I think there wasn't the hype around him that is now. And then, of course...
you're talking about the home match. Sorry, my apologies.
Then, of course, he bursts on the scene and goes on to do the things he's doing at the moment. And, of course, England get involved then. But I think that definitely Martin O'Neill missed the trick. And the, one of the reasons as well, and management now, because it's so short-term, Martin O'Neill doesn't care about what the Irish team, who's going to be playing in 10 years. So all he was worried about was that qualifying campaign and 18 months or 2 years or whatever he has in charge. But if he really cared, he would have looked at him and thought to himself, he probably looked at Jack Grealish and thought, he can't benefit me in my campaign whatsoever, so he didn't really care. But for the good of the game here, we could have had him for the next 10, 15 years. But
yeah,
they missed
Jack Charlton was really outstanding at that kind of thing, and so was John Giles, who got Mark Lawrence, and then one of the best defenders in the world, to qualify and play for Ireland. But what would John know?
Yeah. Charlton was very good. Charlton got
Aldridge, Ray Houghton,
Yeah,
you know, I got others as well. You know, real top players, and Kevin Sheedy, real right top players. But Jack made it his business because it was good for Jack and it was good for Irish soccer, and nobody else has done it since. John started it, Jack continued it, and.
The granny rule, they called it, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but sure, everyone is using the granny rule. Brazil use it. Spain use it. Spain have a couple of Brazilians in the team, including Costa, occasionally, you know, when he shows up. So every country's doing it, so we shouldn't be ashamed of it. We shouldn't apologise for it. We don't need a report to work that one out either.
Sure. so you're right disappointed people. About Grealish, but are you surprised?
No, I'm not, John. To be fair, and to be fair to everyone concerned, including Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill and the FAI, if he had a chance, he would go. He was always going to go with England. But as Alan has just pointed out, 18 months ago, we could have capped him at full international level when he was a lot less well known, and Roy Keane was in that club, and he would have been. He would have known if he knows anything about football from the management side. Coaching side, this guy is a real class player, and he was in there on the 21 squad. Pop him in the first team, we've got him. He's in the, as Trapp said, the cat would have been in the bag. That was a chance missed. But for the reasons Alan just stated about O'Neill's commitment to the job long term, we didn't do it.
It's been a strange weekend. United are top of the league. The spoofer has them top.
I know. I might have to get another job. But
the game's gone, Eamon. The game's gone.
No. I tell you what. I was watching Gary Neville there on Sky, and he was terrific. He didn't sound particularly convinced. But they have played, played Newcastle, drew at home, played Sunderland. But there's a long way to go. But they've signed a very, very good player. This fellow from
Martial, yeah.
Yeah, he looks top class. And a top-class centre-forward, which is exactly what they needed. So, it's we'll see. His best quote was that he was doing all this work and signing all these players for his successor.
Yeah.
That would be the real beneficiary. That's a real spoofer talk as well.
So you're not changing your opinion about Van Gaal then, no?
Van Gaal? No, to be honest, I haven't. I'm sure he's a spoofer. The question is, can he get a performance, out of Manchester United? And can he rebuild a club that, by its own standards, needs to be rebuilt? And there were signs that he signed a lot of young players, some of whom can play. Young Shaw, who unfortunately is out for
broke
the season.
Leg, yeah.
But he's left a few ominous gaps. There's no midfield player signed and no real commanding central defender. So he'd have a bit to do to convince me at the moment.
And they didn't look so good in Europe, did they?
They didn't. No, they didn't look good in Europe. And they've looked a bit of a mess in a lot of matches. Swansea, for example, away. And they haven't really played any of the top teams yet. They've got Arsenal this coming weekend. Now, that should be a really interesting match because Arsenal will, provide quality opposition.
They'll have a go.
They'll have a go in their own way.
Their next three games are huge, John. To have Everton, Arsenal, I think Liverpool.
That'll test them.
That
right.
will tell them, yeah. Sure. But nobody's convinced yet.
What about Chelsea, lads?
It's over, John.
Do you think?
Yeah.
The interesting bet, I think it was Gary Murphy who told me before the season started, have a few quid at 50-1 on Mourinho being gone before the end of the season. It's a good bet now, isn't it?
I think it's a fantastic bet. I think that something's happened with Abramovich. Happened in the summer. He wanted to get players and the checkbook was closed. Because Mourinho's a great coach with a great record. He must have known what the rest of us knew, that he needed a striker, needed a quality midfield player, and he needed...
Someone to replace Terry.
Yeah, to replace John Terry and phase Terry out if you wanted to, but do it a lot less quickly than it's been done, and it hasn't worked. I think there's big trouble there, and I think he could be on his bike again. But certainly... they're not going to win the championship, and I thought they would before the season. I thought he'd get his way, and the players would do it for him. But I watched them against Newcastle.
They were poor. And that's a shock. That's a shockingly bad Newcastle side as well.
It is, yeah. But there's nothing new there.
And Man City as well. I mean, they were steamrolling everybody, Alan, at the start of the season. But they had 5 wins out of 5. Looked like they're going to run away with the championship. Lo and behold, Spurs thumped them at the weekend after being a goal down.
Yeah, it's you look at the spine of their team, John, and you can talk about all these players that they sign and they spend the money on, but when you've no company, and in particular when you've no Silva, because in my opinion Silva's the best player in the league, and they look a totally different team once he's not playing, and you've seen that obviously against Spurs. Spurs were young and kind of lot of energy about the team. It was good to see Harry Kane score as well. But yeah, I suppose when you consider the form that they were in at the start of the season, City, no one predicted that they'd lose 2 in the bounce. And I don't know what's gone wrong with football, but they're all
they
all seem to be very ordinary at the moment. And it makes for good kind of matches maybe to see some of the other teams, the likes of Crystal Palace doing okay, and West Ham and Swansea and these kind of teams as well, because you'd be sick of looking
West Ham
at the
same
teams.
Some nice football. Yeah? Swansea are playing some good stuff. The league has kind of opened up a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I think Alan's right. None of them are really... there's not a championship side, a championship-winning team in that league at the moment. They're all works in progress, or Chelsea on the way down, Manchester United possibly moving up. City are very unpredictable, and as Alan pointed out rightly, David Silva would be one of the best 5 players in the world, very close up behind Messi and Ronaldo. And he's missing. They're missing him terribly. Mm. Vincent Kompany is their captain and their leader. His fitness has been poor in the last 18 months. When he's out of the team, they have a couple of clowns at the back and another couple of midfielders. And then they have
clowns
Yaya.
And spoofers.
Yeah,
Yaya only plays when he has the ball at his feet. And sometimes, he goes AWOL, and in tough games he goes AWOL.
Will you look at that, aiming that back four Saturday? Sanya, Di Michaelis, Otamendi, Kolarov, and even the keeper, the Caballero fella.
He was poor.
Yeah, Cowboys.
Yeah, very, very poor. For a championship side, you should be rock solid. And they're not. There's no character in that dressing room, I'd say. You look at Nasri, for example, who's, Didier Deschamps has bombed him out of the French camp altogether because he's such a bad influence on people and won't get about his business. He's only on 180 grand a week, so maybe he feels he needs a rise. But they've got a lot of guys like that,
I'd love it, 180 grand a week.
I know, you try for what you get, and so do we, don't we, Alan?
We do, Eamon, definitely.
Quick word in the last minute about Rodgers. Will he survive, Eamon?
I hope so. I think I like Liverpool. I think they'll beat United when they play them. If Benteke is fit, if they've got Sturridge and Coutinho around him, and just can do that. I like Chan. I like Jordan Ibe, the right winger, if he plays. They have a lot of good, skillful players. need to get a centre half. That's the problem.
All right, listen, Eamon, thanks for joining us. We were going to talk to Ian Carter, but the football chat went on longer than we expected, and it's been good talking to you. Thanks, Eamon.
Okay, see you, Eamon.
All right, cheers. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure,
as well.
John,
it was
as
actually
always.
Quite entertaining conversation.
Very good,
I really enjoyed it. Hugh will be back tomorrow, all fine, fit and healthy, we hope. Andrew O'Connor and Robbie Irwin co-produced tonight. I'm John Kenny. Terrific to be with you. I will be definitely with you here on Friday week. Outside of that, you never know when
and
I'm
Soccer
back.
Republic, tune in 11 o'clock.
Are you on?
Yes.
Of course you are. Tonight, Soccer Republic, we'll know more about the report.
And when I write my consultation report, I'll make sure to interview Eamon.
All right. John Kenny, the rest of the crew, bye for now.